Start your weekend off right. This is BetQLU with RJ Choppy, Chris Mack, and Kayla Canarim on the BetQL Network, presented by BetMGM.
Let's do it, friends. We are down the home stretch of the college football season. Plenty to talk about as we're now just 2 weeks away from conference championship games and knowing what the CFP will look like as that continues to get hammered out each and every Tuesday live coast to coast on the BetQL Network. Welcome in to BetQLU. I'm Chris Mack alongside RJ Choppy and Kayla Canarim. We are also wherever you may be in the world on your Odyssey app. Take us with you, whatever you're up to. AUDACY, download it today. Subscribe. You'll get the podcast episodes delivered right to you as soon as we are done. And you can hear us live every Friday night, 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, and every Saturday morning, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, as we get you ready for another week of college football action. It's the whole idea of what we do, guys, is fun. You know, as our friend Nick Costos likes to call it, wagertainment, right? And that's what we do every week. We have fun. We make bets. And I think we've had a blast this year. But I really quickly, just for a split second, for a moment, wanted to mention everything that happened in Charlottesville this past week, the University of Virginia, and just say, I think I speak for all three of us, but if you guys have anything to add, by all means, jump in. When we just say our thoughts, our prayers with everybody in Charlottesville, everybody attached to the University of Virginia, especially the football team and the athletics department. All too often we see these things happen and we're becoming all that much more numb to these events, I think, unfortunately. But University of Virginia football team has canceled their game this weekend. Questions still remain about whether they'll play the final weekend of the season as well. But we are obviously all thinking of them this weekend after the events of the past week or so. And I think that sums it up, right?
Chris. Yeah, right there with you. Been praying for these students, families, friends all week, and it's a senseless tragedy. It is so sad. I don't know why this keeps happening, but it didn't need to happen. And these were three young, bright, talented men, and it's devastating.
Yeah,
heart goes out to everyone at University of Virginia.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the rest of the players of the team. I mean, they're dealing with the trauma of this for the rest of their lives. I mean, they're not going to go a day without having something, you know, kind of remind them of this. And it's just, it's awful.
Yeah. So again, our thoughts, our prayers, everybody here at the BetQL Network, at Odyssey, I think everybody in the sports media can speak with one voice and say our thoughts are with everybody at the University of Virginia this week and beyond in their time of grieving and mourning. Now, let's get back to what we love to do, which is talk about college football. And this week in particular, as we roll from week 11 into week 12, let's start with what we learned in week 11. Senor Choppy, I let you start us. What did you learn in week 11?
Oh, man. I learned that if you have a half a brain, you never trust Steve Sarkisian. Never, ever trust Sark. All right.
Steve Sarkisian. You know what? Agent of chaos.
This wasn't even about TCU. All right, now TCU played a heck of a game, but this had nothing to do with TCU. This was about the most disappointing athletic department, the most disappointing football program in college football history, the University of Texas. The University of Texas has the most money, the most students, the most talent in their state, the most resources of anybody, and they have one title since Vietnam. And it took Superman to do it. All right, it took Superman to get them that title, and they were getting destroyed in that game. And if USC doesn't lateral at the 5 yard line, they'd probably get blown out. This is the most disappointing. I'm going to go on a rant here. This is the most disappointing.
Oh, you're already there, my man. You're already there.
It's sports. It's the most disappointing program, athletic department, whatever you want to call it, in sports. There is no reason that the University of Texas puts out that ever. And they do it year after year after year. They ran Mack Brown out of town. Mack Brown's about to have the number one pick in the draft at quarterback in a couple of years. I mean, he might win a title there. I don't know. But they're a better program right now than Texas is. And Texas is out like their 19th coach. You think Arch Manning is looking at this like, man, I can't wait to get a part of that thing. I mean, what a dumpster fire it is. And that's what I learned. I learned never trust Sark. And that's the most disappointing athletic department in the world. I'm sorry I took up so much of your time.
The stars at night are again bright. Deep in the heart of Texas. Kayla, what'd you learn in week 11?
Well, I don't know how to follow that.
How do you top that? Yeah.
I think what Texas needs is Coach Kyle Taylor to come in and turn things around. Anyway, that's a Friday Night Lights reference if you didn't get it. I learned that Bama and Tennessee are still really good football teams and are able to bounce back after tough losses. And unfortunately, it came at the hands of my Missouri Tigers in a humiliating fashion. Thanks a lot, Vols. But I think my biggest takeaway was the Ducks, whose playoff hopes were dashed in a matter of a few minutes after going for it on fourth down, not converting, that resulted in Washington getting that go-ahead field goal. Having a banged up Bo Nix, who was briefly out of the game, certainly didn't help anything. But guys, this was a team that last week we were talking about potentially getting into the playoffs, and now they've dropped six spots, sitting at 12th. USC gets bumped up to 7th, and the best they can hope for at this point is the Pac-12 championship. So I was hoping the Ducks could make a run, but this definitely shook things up in the Pac-12.
Yeah, Pac-12 elimination chamber of sorts Saturday night. We'll get into that, both of the big games, a little bit later. But you're right, Oregon had the lane laid bare right in front of them, Kayla, and they swerved off the side of the road into a bridge abutment. I learned nothing beats, and I guess this is more this week's lesson for me than last week's, but what the heck, I'll throw it at you. Nothing beats the pure, unadulterated bliss of snow-covered midweek red-hot action. Mm-hmm. On a Tuesday or Wednesday night, the snow's coming down in central Michigan. You got a couple of directional Michigans playing each other. They can't see the sidelines. They can't even see the sticks 10 yards out, much less the end zones down at the other end of the field. That's the kind of stuff I know we were hoping to see it this weekend with the Bills and the Browns, and they decided to divert that game to Detroit. Not to get way off topic, but I was hoping to see that this weekend. We got a little taste, a little preview of it. It whetted our appetite for it Tuesday and Wednesday with the Maction that took place. And the games actually ended up being fun to watch, too. That's the one thing about the Mac, is they get that sort of they get the primetime spotlight all to themselves late in the year with those Tuesday and Wednesday night games, and they took full advantage of it, giving everyone college football in a snow globe this week. And it was fun to watch. Just reminds you of the pure, unadulterated joy and bliss that you can get out of college football. Same thing on Tuesday night as far as the CFP rankings go. Same top four, same top five, really. Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan, TCU, Tennessee 5. With Oregon losing, as Kayla mentioned, LSU jumps up to 6, Southern Cal up to 7, Bama 8, Clemson 9, Utah at 10. So let's start with this as we start to look at the path towards the top four. I've talked to some people this week who think this could end up being the top four. I think the loser of the Ohio State-Michigan game has a fair chance to drop out if it is, in fact, Michigan. Ohio State may not drop out if they lose to Michigan in a tight one, certainly. But let's start with the team on the outside looking in, RJ's Tennessee Volunteers. And RJ, can the Vols get back in simply by just supplanting the loser of next weekend's Ohio State-Michigan game?
I think if the loser's Michigan, they can. I think the committee will find a way to get Ohio State in there. Whether that's deserved or not, I think they will. I do think that for me personally, I need like three losses here to feel safe. I need a USC loss, I need a TCU loss, and I need a Michigan loss. If I get just a TCU loss, you know, I think there's a chance that if it's Ohio State that loses that game, they could stay in. If not, you know, then I feel okay about it. If it's just Michigan losing, I still want USC to get knocked out somewhere along the way. But, I think they can certainly get in. But remember, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, the committee thought Tennessee at undefeated was better than Ohio State undefeated. So if they both have one loss, maybe they feel the same way. Ohio State's loss would be a home loss, which I think is worse than a road loss, even though it was really non-competitive. So it's tough to say, but I would assume they're okay.
Kayla, what do you think? If, for example, Michigan beats Ohio State in a tight game, maybe it's a walk-off field goal, maybe even in overtime, is it more likely we get two Big Ten teams in the Final Four in that case, and Tennessee somehow gets shutout, assuming TCU wins out and Georgia wins out. Essentially, we're asking the question, I think, does the combo of Ohio State and Michigan have to lose twice for Tennessee to get back in?
Ooh, this one is tough. RJ, I would love nothing more than for Tennessee to get in. I think they've showed who they are this season. They're a great team. Just despite that Georgia loss, I hope that they have convincing wins over South Carolina and Vanderbilt that will help that resume, but not the greatest teams to hang your hat on. I'm personally banking for TCU to drop one so that Tennessee can somehow get in, because that's a great question. I don't know how the Ohio State Michigan thing is going to work itself out. Then we'll have two SEC, two Big Ten. Is that going to be fun for the rest of the country? I don't know. Probably not.
Right.
I don't know. I'm pulling for Tennessee to get in, but I agree with RJ. I think out of those two, they're definitely going to try to keep Ohio State in the mix somehow. This is such a mind-boggling situation. I can't even figure it out, but it's definitely going to be entertaining nonetheless to see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah, and Saturday night, obviously, the Pac-12 has something to say about this, because if we work our way down from Tennessee at 5, we get to LSU at 6, Southern Cal at 7. And then the question there is, can a Southern Cal win against UCLA help them leap an LSU team who's favored by 2 touchdowns and a hook at home against UAB? So if USC should beat UCLA, 16th in the country, by 10, by a couple of touchdowns, maybe even. I don't think it'll be that big, but let's say that happens. And LSU doesn't quite, maybe LSU doesn't cover against UAB. Let's play that scenario out. Is there a college football playoff hope, RJ, for the Pac-12 outside of, you know, multiple top 4 losses and a Tennessee loss? And again, they have South Carolina. They're on the road at South Carolina this Saturday.
Yeah, there's an opportunity for them to get in there. I think the committee has shown they kind of like the Pac-12. They had 3 teams in the top 12 last week. I think they've shown they like it. But USC is they're a huge brand, and this is a, I don't know how big of a brand they are now. I mean, certainly they are in LA, but like, I don't know how big nationally they are compared to, like, you know, a Michigan or an Ohio State, which is this. I mean, they're global icons. But still, they're just a name. And I think the committee would love, this is a TV, this is made for TV. So they would absolutely love the LA market. There's no doubt about it. So I think you have to play into all these factors. I think the USC is a really viable option for the committee to put into the Final Four.
So Kayla, let me ask you this, because you were a champion of Clemson early in the year. Clemson now number 9 in the country. Fraudson, as producer Zach labeled them, and we've stuck with that. The long and winding road for them to somehow end up in the top 4 probably includes winning out, including over UNC in the ACC championship game. Ohio State and Michigan combining for a pair of losses along the way. TCU losing, Tennessee losing again somehow, and the Pac-12 champ having 2 losses. Is that at all realistic?
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Yeah. Yes. No. It is highly unlikely that my Clemson Tigers are going to make it in the playoff, and I've accepted that. Like you just said, a lot has to happen. I would love to see them make a run, but I think those playoff hopes are dashed for Dabo and the Clemson Tigers at this point. That's a lot of stuff that needs to go on.
That's a lot of dominoes that, need to fall in just the right order.
Exactly.
Yeah.
RJ, you mentioned you alluded to Drake May earlier and talking about the job Mack Brown has done at Chapel Hill. Is there any way at all North Carolina, if they win their final 2 regular season games and then beat Clemson in the ACC championship game, if all this chaos happens, could they be the team that takes advantage of it with 1 loss out of the ACC?
Man, I don't see it. I don't see how the committee would view, because they look at strength of record. They look at, right. I guess they don't technically look at game control, but they kind of do look at game control. Do they look at these other metrics like the SP Plus and all that stuff? And, you don't really have, there's like 4 or 5 teams, and there's a gap in all those. I don't see how you're going to be able to get like, convince me a 1-loss North Carolina or Clemson, beats a 1-loss Michigan or Ohio State or Tennessee.
Right.
I don't see how that happens. I don't know how the committee would be able to justify that.
That's a good call by you. Maryland sports fans, we've got you covered. Yes, sports betting is coming. It's next week in Maryland. Mobile sports betting. We want to get you prepped here at BetQL to win big. The BetQL Network hosting live shows at BetMGM National Harbor Sportsbook all weekend, including Monday. You can watch the USA's World Cup opener that afternoon, followed by Monday Night Football, Arizona, San Francisco, with all your favorite BetQL personalities, including the guys from You Better You Bet. That all going down this weekend at BetMGM National Harbor Sportsbook. Coming up next, four teams enter, but can one come out a playoff candidate? It's the Pac-12 Elimination Chamber. We talk about both of those huge games Saturday night out west. And yes, Kayla's Mizzou Tigers did something by way of association that no one else has done recently. We'll explain. It's all on the way alongside RJ Choppy and Kayla Canarum. I'm Chris Mack. This is BetQLU.
This is BetQLU with RJ, Chris, and Kayla here on the BetQL Network, presented by BetMGM.
Back to BetQLU with RJ Choppy, Chris Mack, and Kayla Canarum on the BetQL Network, presented by BetMGM.
Yeah, welcome back in. I'm Chris Mack. He's RJ Choppy. She's Kayla Canarum. You can see us if you're watching us on YouTube or on Twitch, twitch.tv/BetQL, or you may just be listening to us across the BetQL Network and on your Odyssey app, AUDACY. Maybe you're listening to the podcast. However you consume us every single week, we appreciate you doing so. As we rip through a slate of, well, let's see, there's big games, and then there's what's happening in the Pac-12. We'll get to all those games. A little Heisman heat check before we wrap things up today with some big numbers. One record-breaking small number. And, of course, our best bets as well, all coming up here on BetQLU. Before we get to something Missouri did by association, I'm sure you'll be very proud of this, Kayla. Before we get to that, before we get to another game that we think should be a walkover for a top-ranked team, before we get to someone down in the Metroplex in RJ's backyard who's already got some things sewn up, let's start with the madness out west. The Pac-12 race, still an absolute free-for-all for the most part. Five teams are within a game at the top of the standings. ESPN's SP Plus ranking currently gives Utah the best chance to win the conference, 36%. Oregon, 29%. USC, 27%. The Bruins of UCLA, just 7%. And Washington's still alive, technically. The Huskies at 0.4%. With all that said, let's go to LA. 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific kick on Fox. Number 7 Trojans against number 16 Bruins. USC favored by 2.5. Big old fat total. Biggest total on the board this week, 75. It's great to have this rivalry back, guys, because between 78 and 88, these two teams met 7 times in those 11 seasons as ranked teams. It's only happened 6 times in the 34 seasons since. You've also got 2 great offenses, UCLA 5th in rushing success rate, 16th in passing, USC 4th in rushing success rate, 6th in passing, and the defenses are porous. Their success rate allowed, both rushing and passing, all of those rankings 100 and above. So all of that said, with USC covering the spread 6 times in 10 games to this point, UCLA going over more often than not this year. I'll open the floor to you first, Kayla. You're out there in Southern California. What's your read being with those two teams in your backyard, Trojans and Bruins, Saturday night?
I am one with these two teams out here, yes. The good old crosstown showdown. As you mentioned, the stat where this is like the 12th time these two teams have faced off while both being ranked, and they've gone 6-6 in those meetings. This has also always been a pretty back and forth matchup, with UCLA dismantling USC just last season, and then while USC handled them the year before that. So I think what I'm trying to say here, guys, is good luck. I feel more confident in the fact that USC has a lot more to play for in this game, as they are still fighting for that playoff spot. Caleb Williams has put this team on his back. He's gotten little help from this USC defense, and they're still 9-1. And for what it's worth, UCLA's defense is not great either. But both of these teams have covered the spread in 6 of their 10 games. But only one of these teams has that small but realistic shot at the playoffs. So I like the Trojans to cover here at -2.5. As for the total, this is absolutely huge for being a rival game. I'm aware neither team is great at defense, but my gosh, this is high. USC has exceeded this total 4 times, however. UCLA has only reached it twice. Part of me kind of wants to have some fun and take the over, but I think I'm leaning the under of 75 in this one.
Okay. Yeah, UCLA, 7 of their 10 games have gone over. USC, 7 of their games have hit the over as well. Against the spread this year as 2.5-point or better favorites. USC, 5-4 against that spread. I have a feeling this is going to go down to the last possession. Simply whoever has the ball last walks away the winner. RJ, what do you look at with this one?
Well, I do like the over in this game. I know it's a lot of points, but man, this is one of those things. This could be over by the end of the third quarter with the over, right? I don't have a great feel on the line. I see what Kayla's saying that, you know, USC is the only team that has anything to play for, but you know, this is a really underrated rivalry in terms of the hatred that these two, you know, programs have for each other. I can't wait till they're sharing charter flights in a couple of years when they join the Big Ten. That's going to be really cool to see. But yeah, this is I don't have a great feel on the number, so I would stay away from the number. I think the computer models I saw like UCLA plus the 2.5, but I'm going to stay away from that. I'll just stick with the over 76.5. I know it's a lot. I know it's a lot of points, but you know, I usually bet the under because I'm a miserable person, but I'm going to go the over here and have some fun.
Yeah. I usually bet the over.
We're trading spots.
Yeah. That's Hey, it's that time of year where you start to go a little contrarian to see if you can't make up for some past losses here and there. All right. As this one is wrapping up, they will be hurtling towards the 2-minute warning or halftime in Eugene, where number 12 Oregon hosts number 10 Utah, 7:30 Pacific on ESPN Saturday. Two meetings between these two teams last year within a 3-week span, and Utah dominated both of them, led by a combined 51-0 at halftime of those two games. Cruised 38-7 in the first one, 38-10 in the second one. Big line movement in this one, though, as people are trying to get a read on Bo Nix and his injury and his availability. Overnight, Wednesday night into Thursday morning, this thing moved 5 points from Oregon -3 to now Utah -2. Oregon first in rushing success rate in the country. Bucky Irving, Noah Whittington, over 1,400 yards combined, 6 touchdowns. Utah's run defense, 100th in rushing success rate allowed. So with or without Bo Nix, you would think the Ducks will focus on running the ball. Maybe that brings you into the under, brings that into play. I'm looking at, again, this touches me as a field goal game, guys. RJ, how do you read Utah-Oregon?
I think a lot of it does, you know, hinge on Bo Nix and all that. But, you know, I think Utah is a really tough opponent. They're obviously much more difficult at home, but – you know, they matched up really well with USC. I had a buddy who went to USC. He's like, there's no way we beat Utah. They just, you know, they do well what we don't. And he was right. And I think Utah -2 here, I think that's a good play. I kind of like the under in this game. I think this is kind of going to go the route that the Washington game went, where it's, you know, like, you know, one team scoring in the low 30s and then the other team is going to be in the in the mid-20s, and I think that we'll hit the under here.
Yeah, 60.5 is the number right now at BetMGM. Kayla, Utah, Oregon, I don't know if there's still a legitimate path for either one of these teams with two losses into the playoff. Most likely not, but they can play spoiler, not just for the other guy Saturday night, but then if USC should get past UCLA, there's a chance they get into the Pac-12 championship game and get to ruin the Trojan season as well.
Yeah, Chris, as you mentioned, I know things didn't go great for the Ducks last season in this particular matchup, taking the L in both the regular season and then again in the Pac-12 championship. But that was then, this is now. I'm still high on the Ducks despite that loss last weekend. The last time this game took place in Eugene, the Ducks won 41-20. Yes, it was a few years ago, but still. Oregon is 7-3 against the spread this season, and this spread is low enough to where I feel okay in taking the Ducks to cover at home. Obviously, the biggest concern is whether or not Bo Nix will play after that knee injury, as you both have mentioned. But by all accounts, he should play. They said this week he's preparing himself as if he's a go. So if that is in fact true, I like Oregon to cover. If he's out, then I might be changing my mind. TBD. But the Ducks have said they aren't worried if he is out. It's next man up. But when money is on the line, you know, I don't know if we're taking that bait. As far as the total, I'm going with RJ here. Utah loves racking up the score at home, not so much on the road. They haven't broke 34 points. Then you've got the Ducks, who have put up no less than 34 at home. So the under has hit in 5 of the Utes 10 games and 4 in Oregon. So when you factor in that uncertainty at quarterback for Oregon, I'm leaning the under in this one.
Yeah, I think we're all on the same page in these two Pac-12 games in that it's hard to get a feel, especially in this one because of the Bo Nix injury, it's hard to get a feel for the spread, especially when they're field goal games. And that's what these are, especially when you see such a big 5-point swing in the spread near the end of the week as we have with Utah, Oregon. But the total is attractive. In the UCLA-USC game, for RJ and I, the over was attractive, even at a big, fat, mid-70s number. This one at 60.5, I think we all lean probably under as well because we know what Utah, I think, can do to control the pace of games. And again, if Oregon's going to be without Bo Nix, they probably lean on the run game as well and perhaps slow this game down. Either way, Pac-12 elimination chamber. If you're on the East Coast, you stay up late and enjoy it. If you're on the West Coast, you just enjoy the fact that the focus is on your teams this week. Much earlier than that, 12 Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. It's the big noon kickoff on Fox. Number 4, TCU at Baylor. Total sitting at 57.5. Relatively low, you would think, for a Big 12 game. TCU only favored by 2.5. To Kendre Miller, 100 rushing yards or more, 5 consecutive games, 7 of his last 8, plus a rushing touchdown in 11 games in a row. Baylor has done fairly well on defense against the run, though. On the other side of the ball, though, they have not done well. Blake Chapin averaging only 177.5 yards passing over his past 4 games, just 2 touchdowns to 5 picks. Against the spread is 2.5-point or better favorites, which TCU is. They are 6-1-1 this year. Kayla, does TCU stay undefeated and stay in the CFP conversation?
I'm going with yes against Baylor, and I'm actually a little surprised this one is so close, but I feel good in taking TCU to cover. Baylor has faced 3 ranked teams so far this season, and they've taken the L in all of those games, and TCU is by far the highest ranked team they will have faced. One of those ranked teams came just last week into that ugly loss to K-State, 31-3. I hope they make it more competitive, but I think the Horned Frogs should have a sure win here. Max Duggan is clicking with his Sonny Dykes offense. And last week, the defense prevented Texas from getting in the end zone. Their touchdown was because of a fumble. So I don't think the Bears stand a chance. As far as numbers go, TCU is 8-1-1 against the spread this season, which includes 4 straight covers. So this is an easy one for me. I like the Horned Frogs at -2.5. And this total feels pretty low for a Big 12 game. Yeah. Plus 6 of TCU's 10 games have hit the over, while the total has gone over in 7 of Baylor's games. So moral of the story, I definitely like the over in this one.
Yeah, 6 of TCU's 10 games have hit the over so far this year. And again, 57.5, as Kayla pointed out, pretty low number for teams that have put up points this year, RJ. What's your take on TCU? I know you've had your doubts about them this year, but they've held strong over the last month and a half.
They have. They've held really strong. Now, until Baylor lost 31-3, I thought for sure this would be the game they win. That TCU finds themselves on the short end. It's a good rivalry. Baylor is a very tough opponent. These two programs really don't like each other. But that game last week threw me off. It just threw me for a loop. So I like TCU as well in this one. I don't really have a I would think the under probably hits in this only because Baylor's offense is, I think, a little bit broken right now. And, you know, TCU did not exactly put up a great showing offensively, even though Sonny Dykes is a really good offensive mind, a really good coach. I like TCU to cover and win this one, and then we'll see what happens in the Big 12 title game and if they can stay undefeated and make the Final Four.
I'm all over TCU in this spot. I mean, only having to give 2.5, even if they get out of there by the hair on their chinny chin chin with a late field goal or something. Even if they have to go to OT, if they get out of there with the dub, then I get out of there with a few extra dollars. And I do think with all the motivation on their side of, hey, if we want to get to the playoff, we know we got to stay undefeated. I do like the Horned Frogs in this one. A couple of games with big spreads involving teams that are currently in playoff position I wanted to touch on real quickly. Saturday, noon Eastern, Illinois getting 18 at number 3, Michigan. We were texting about this one earlier in the week. And then number 1, Georgia laying 22 at Kentucky. Will Levis has been a disaster since coming back from that injury in those three games, 3 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. Kentucky lost to Vandy, the Commodores' first conference win since 2019 when they beat – sorry, Kayla. But real quick, I'll let you start. Just a quick take on maybe either one of these games, or if you like either one of these spreads, Kentucky to cover, maybe Illinois to keep it tight between number 1 Georgia at Kentucky and number 3 Michigan hosting Illinois.
I'll go first. I don't know if you delegated. For Illinois, Michigan, I think Illinois can keep it within those 18 points. So I am leaning Illinois to cover in that one. However, with Georgia, Kentucky, I'm sorry. When you lose to Vanderbilt, I just can't take you very seriously. I feel like Georgia is going to be playing for a convincing win to keep themselves atop the CFP ranking. And as you said, Chris, unfortunately, Will Levis has not been the quarterback that Kentucky fans hoped he would be due to that faulty O-line and injuries. So I'm leaning for Georgia to cover in this one at minus 22. And fun fact, guys, which game Georgia was held to their lowest points this season? That would have been Missouri.
Yeah. It was Missouri.
Yeah, we got it.
RJ, real quick, Illinois or Kentucky, does either cover?
Illinois covers. Illinois covers the 18.
Okay.
They don't win the game, but they cover the 18. And I'm with Kayla. I don't think Kentucky. I'm not trusting you. You lose to Vandy, you're out.
Yeah, I think they both get blown out, actually. I think Michigan shows out. And even in a game that comes under a really low total, they still blow out the Illini. Coming up, crowded Heisman field. One guy getting nearly 10% of the bets, though. Plus, we get you some big numbers. One record low number, lower than ever before. And our best bets are next alongside Kayla Kinnerham and RJ Choppy. I'm Chris Mack, and this is BetQLU.
This is BetQLU with RJ, Chris, and Kayla here on the BetQL Network, presented by BetMGM.
Back to BetQLU with RJ Choppy, Chris Mack, and Kayla Kinnerham on the BetQL Network, presented by BetMGM.
We already talked about the biggest total of the week on the board, but there are a couple other big ones to talk about. We'll get you some of those big numbers. And the lowest total in college football betting history. That on the way as well, with some big and little numbers, plus our best bets of the week as well, alongside Kayla Kinnerham and RJ Choppy. I'm Chris Mack. This is BetQLU. Thank you for joining us, whether it's watching the video stream on YouTube or Twitch, twitch.tv/BetQL, whether it's listening to us as a podcast, which you can subscribe to and download on your Odyssey app, AUDACY, or listening to us live on Odyssey or anywhere in the country on the BetQL network. We appreciate you joining us. Every Friday night, we are live, 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, and Saturday morning, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, as we roll through our previews of all the week's biggest game. And occasionally, a couple weeks at a time, we like to get you a little Heisman heat check. C.J. Stroud's still the favorite, guys. Plus 130. 9.2% of the bets in the Heisman market are currently on C.J. Stroud. He is the betting favorite, way and above anybody else. Hendon Hooker of Tennessee has fallen back down a little bit, at down to 3-1. If only he would have beaten the Bulldogs. Drake May, fast riser, all the way up to 5-1, the North Carolina quarterback. He's thrown for at least 280 yards in every single Heels game this year. Then you get to Blake Corum, 6-1, 6 straight 100-yard games on the ground. Bo Nix dealing with that injury we talked about earlier, Oregon quarterback, from 50-1 before the season, all the way up to 8-1 now, or down to 8-1, I guess. He's had nothing but big games since the Georgia loss leading up to the Washington loss. And then you get to Caleb Williams, Stetson Bennett, Bryce Young. So Anybody that still has value in this market for you guys? I like Drake May, and I love watching him play, and I think he's fun to talk about, but I don't think he can do enough between now and 3 weeks from now to necessarily win the Heisman. RJ?
No, I don't think there's anybody with a tremendous amount of value. I mean, Hooker at 3-1. I mean, that's better value than basically even money. And if you think that he's got a shot to win it, and I think he does have a shot to win it, then you can place a bet there. I'll tell you, last week, Kale, I know you didn't want us to run up the score on you and everything, but with every single handoff running touchdown, I died inside a little bit. Because I was trying to pass that. What TD yes. passes. What TD passes and TD rushes. I don't even want TD rushes because I don't think the voters, these voters, I mean, half these people who vote for this thing aren't smart enough to look at TD rushes. They just look at the overall passing numbers. So I didn't, any kind of running TD, I'm dying inside a little bit with Hooker.
Kayla, is there anybody on the Heisman board that you like besides CJ Stroud right here?
I am right there with RJ. I like Hinton Hooker. I don't know if you guys, does not playing in an SEC championship maybe hurt his chances?
I think so, yeah.
Again, not even making the playoff. I would love to see him make a run for it. But at the moment, yeah, it looks like CJ Stroud's Heisman to lose.
Yeah. And that's, again, he's been the odds-on favorite, really, since the start of the season. I mean, the interesting one to me that has fallen way down is Bryce Young. We know he's dealt with injuries, but he's also just looked human at times. He's all the way down there at 33-1 now after starting the season at +350. All right, speaking of some big numbers, biggest spread of the week, Washington against Colorado. Huskies laying 31. Colorado's bad, real bad, though. 2-8 against the spread. 0-8 against the spread when the spread is 17 or more, as this one is. So even when there are big spreads, they fail to cover them. I think I like Washington to cover this one. They're flying high, coming off the Oregon win. I think there's an opportunity for them to kind of bully Colorado, rub their face in the dirt, I should say. You guys have any interest, Kayla, RJ?
I'll go right there with you, Chris.
You'll take it? All right.
Oh, we're split. We're split. Every time I take one, it doesn't hit. Every time I don't take one, it does hit. So.
Well, now I don't feel
so. 30 is just a lot of points. 30 is a lot of points. I know Colorado stinks, but man, it's a lot of points to take. And you just wonder, did they use up all of it last week? I mean, Washington, I mean, that was a really good performance they put on. They obviously are going to win this game. Colorado's terrible, but 30's a lot.
I could see Penix getting loose for a couple, though. Chucking up a couple deep balls that hit, and before you know it, it's one of those. It's one of those games, almost like USC kind of toyed with Colorado in the first quarter last week. I could see it being, 10-3 at the end of the first quarter. Oh my gosh, why is this a one-possession game? And then Washington ends up going off in that middle eight that everybody talks about, the final 4 minutes of the second quarter and first 4 minutes of the third quarter. They put up like four touchdowns, and before you know it, it's 42-10, and everybody's going, yeah, no problem. We had 31 all the way. Smallest total of the week. How about this? The Iowa Hawkeyes Memorial Offensive Futility Award, coincidentally enough, going to be awarded to the Iowa Hawkeyes this year. 32.5. It may get worse next weekend when they play Nebraska, but this weekend, Iowa at Minnesota, and it's going to be cold for this one in the Twin Cities. Game time temperatures in the teens, wind whipping around at about 15 to 20 miles an hour. The total, 32.5. Iowa has faced six totals this season, under 40. They've gone over the number just twice in those half dozen opportunities. Yes, they're 2-4 to the total in six totals of less than 40. There have been two totals set at 34 in college football history. Those both went under. I think this 32.5, as crazy as it sounds, Kayla, this may go under as well. We could have a classic like 13-7, 13-10 kind of game here.
I like the under. As you mentioned, weather is going to be a factor. And then that stat about 2 34s in history both going under. Let's take the under.
RJ, you with us? Come on. Team under.
Yeah, I'll go under. Iowa's terrible. Pound it right there. There we go. I'll take the under with you guys. It's like the Army Navy game. Like, you just can't go, you can't make the number low enough.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can make the number low enough when it's outdoors in Minnesota and it's Iowa. I don't know the number can go low enough.
Yeah, and I'm curious. Again, I mentioned the Nebraska game next week for Iowa. If they should hit the under against Minnesota this week, we know how, you know, talk about offensive futility. Nebraska right there with Iowa, the Big Ten West, the home of offensive futility. I mean, those two could get together for a total set at like, the opening total could be like 30, 31 next week between Iowa and Nebraska. That's going to be something to watch. Largest total of the week. We talked earlier about USC, UCLA sitting right around 76. Other than that, you got Houston, ECU at 67.5. We always like seeing AAC games go over the total. Number five, Tennessee at South Carolina. We talked about them earlier. That total at 66. I actually like the under in that one. We'll get to that in a moment. And Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Bedlam, the total in that one set at 66 as well. I don't know if you guys like any of those totals over or under. I know we talked USC, UCLA earlier. Any of these other ones stick out to either one of you? Kayla, any of these totals?
Obviously, I've got to go my Big 12 matchup, Bedlam, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma. I like the over of 66.
RJ?
Well, just remember, unders favor the underdog. And that is not good for my Volunteers, so I would hope to go over on that one. I would hope to go over.
I've got some reasoning for you on that in just a moment, which brings us to, actually, our best bets of the week. And Kayla, I'll let you start. What do you got cooked up for us as far as a best bet goes this weekend? You're out in Southern California. Is it one of those Pac-12 elimination chamber games? Is it sticking by your Missouri Tigers? What do you got this week?
Well, speaking of those Missouri Tigers, Chris, your zinger went over my head earlier. I was checking a stat. We're also 3 hours behind over here. I'm just waking up, but that was very rude. That Vanderbilt comment, I appreciate it. Guys, stop me if you've heard this before. There's going to be no more Mizzou for me. You heard it here first. If I utter their name ever again, just tell me to go home because I'm drunk. They're dead to me. Not really, but at least for the rest of the betting season, they are. I was so confident in them covering against Tennessee. And of course, our defense was finally just like done. They've carried us all season. And Saturday is when the defense said, you know what? We're done here. So sorry for misleading the masses. On behalf of the University of Missouri, I apologize. The end. But this time I'm going to be going with another Tigers, and that is the Clemson Tigers in this Miami game. Give me the first half under of 24, because aside from week one in this past week, and the Hurricanes have played in some pretty low scoring games, and this time they're doing it against a defense who is top 20 in efficiency. I think Clemson will keep Miami out of the end zone in the first half, while the Tigers have only had three games in which they've scored three touchdowns in the first 30 minutes. So I like the first half under of 24.
I like it. RJ, your best bet or bets of the weekend, what do you got for us?
All right, I got a couple for you here. I like Illinois. Yep. We've already talked about that. Illinois plus the 18. I also like Navy plus 16 against Central Florida. Okay. So I like the middies there. And then finally, it's a very tough place to play. Tough road trip. Give me West Virginia plus the 7.5 against K-State.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, I like that. Where K-State fighting and scratching and clawing for that Big 12 championship berth. If they were to perhaps lose, I know you're taking West Virginia points, but if that thing's close, that could lead to a lot of tightness in the Little Apple this weekend. All right, I mentioned it to you earlier, RJ. I know you said unders favor the dogs, but here's the catch with number five, Tennessee, visiting South Carolina, and the total set at 66. South Carolina's offense has been really unimpressive this year. They've hit 30 against just one Power 5 team, and that was Vandy. Yeah, Shane Beamer admitted earlier this week on his coach's show that the Gamecocks' top two running backs, Marshawn Lloyd, Christian Beal-Smith, they're both out for this one. So they're down to sophomore Juju McDowell, who's averaging only 3.7 yards a carry this year. Okay, we add all that up with Oklahoma transfer Spencer Rattler being extremely underwhelming this year in South Carolina, and pair it with a Tennessee team that I think, yeah, I get it. They're capable of beating this total single-handedly, 66 probably, if they really go off. But I think they'll jump out early. They'll let off the gas late, probably coast a little bit with a multiple touchdown lead. So I'm taking the under. I think this ends up being like a 41-17 kind of game. You may end up sweating it in the end. crossing your fingers for a Spencer Rattler pick, maybe to keep the backdoor cover from happening, the backdoor total cover. But give me Tennessee and South Carolina under 66. Are you with me, Mr. Vols, RJ Choppy?
Man, I want high. I want the high scoring, but I'll stay with you because you make some good points.
All right, I like it.
And we need to have a defensive show in here. It needs to be like 41-10.
Okay, I'll take it. I like it. For Kayla Kinnear, for RJ Choppy, for our entire crew here on BetQLU, if you just caught the tail end of the show live, don't forget the podcast will be up shortly. You can go download it. If you listen to the podcast and subscribed already, rate and review. And don't forget, you can watch us on YouTube and Twitch as well. We'll do it again next weekend. Stay here for your home for wagertainment on the BetQL Network. This is BetQLU.
This is BetQLU with RJ, Chris, and Kayla here on the BetQL Network, presented by BetMGM.